This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire, and this is episode 260. My co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and we are joined once again for the second show in a row by Justin Higdon, one of the contributors over Revenge of the Birds, and former podcaster with Seth at the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast from yesteryear. We had him on a week ago as we previewed the Combine. In this edition of the show, in episode 260, we are going to go into our reactions to what happened at the Combine. Seth, Justin, welcome back as always. And thank you, Justin, for coming on again as well, we had a little bit newer format with the Combine. Primetime stuff, teams got to talk to fewer players, and overall, I mean, there was a lot of intrigue, and some positions stood out, others did not. Let's just go jumping off right here to start off, Seth. Initial reactions overall to the format and to what you thought of the draft of the Combine class as a whole.
I mean, the format's fine for people like me that work and can't watch it at their office because their coworkers in the room at the same time. But for the rest of the us, I'm sure people prefer to be able to stream it on their phone or at work without anybody being aware that it's happening, more than they like to have to try to fight their kids and wife to come home and watch the NFL Combine, which really means nothing to anybody outside of football nerds. So, I mean, I don't mind it. I got to watch a little more than I normally do in sense of it being live, but I didn't, it didn't make it a huge difference to me. I will say, like, the overall testing results seem to negatively be affected by the timing, but is that the reason, or is it just more the class?
That could be. What about you, Justin? What are your overall thoughts on the format, the timing? It's like, I will admit fully to the audience, I've been covering the Cardinals for nearly a decade, and when it comes, and I've covered the draft and I've covered the Combine, I watch every year almost zero of the actual Combine. I pay attention to it on Twitter, I watch the highlights, and I look at the charts and the results, but I watch, and over the course of the year, I watch enough practice between training camp and things where I don't need to see it live. So it didn't really matter when it was, other than the results came to me later as opposed to earlier. But Justin, what were your overall thoughts? I know you're telling us off the year about how you this year got to watch very little of it because prime time is family time, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a hard sell to get your wife and, your 4-year-old daughter and your 18-month-old daughter to watch something like that. They're trying to watch, My Little Pony, or maybe my wife wants to watch Better Call Saul or something like that. So I just couldn't catch much of it. I usually don't watch a ton because some of the workouts fall on a weekday. But I do, in the past, I've always caught the receivers, quarterbacks, at least haven't seen them run, the running backs usually. I always, every year, miss the DBs anyway because they had previously been on Mondays. But, I heard a lot of complaints about the primetime format, not just from viewers, but from people who were there in attendance, and they were kind of echoing that the sentiments they were hearing from, like, NFL people too. So I don't think it was very popular with anyone. Like Seth said, it seems to have affected some of the testing, but I have my doubts on that. I mean, you had a high percentage of guys really struggling in the agility drills, but you had some other guys who did fantastic job, and I'm just not sold 100%. I need to see more evidence that that was the reason. But again, there were complaints not just from the NFL people, but from a lot of agents, and even I even saw a couple threats about people, agents saying they're going to hold their top guys out if this format remained. But I think that's an empty threat, because putting it in primetime, it's going to increase viewership across the board in general, and I don't think they're going to be able to go back from there.
Probably. That makes sense. And more and more, I mean, as crazy as it sounds, watching workouts and drills, it makes the fans more familiar with these prospects. I mean, as we talk about some of the players moving forward, how many of the general NFL public knew what a Chase Claypool was? I mean, I will say, after, now this is the plug for the site, of course, over cardswire.com, I did some posts where I did the results of every position group, and so you can go through a gallery of the different players with the different positions and with the results. It felt this year that athletically, overall, the class was a little slower and a little less. So obviously, there are some great ones, but overall, on the whole, there seemed to be fewer fast guys, like top-end fast, and fewer top-end quick. Just maybe the times were changed, were down a little bit because of the format, but you'd think that athleticism would kind of go past scheduling for the most part, I would think. But in this edition of the show, what we're going to we've got those reactions out of the way, but we're going to focus on our kind of individual things. We're going to talk about the players who stood out, who did the most good for themselves, who are the players who athletically, with the testing of the combine, kind of hurt themselves, at least perceptually, as we know that, you know, how draft stock, quote unquote, rises and falls isn't nearly as drastic among teams as it is among the public, because teams aren't necessarily ranking players yet. But, well, who helped themselves the most? Who hurt themselves the most? We're going to go Cardinals-centric for a section where we talk about what the combine meant for the Cardinals in terms of their first, second, and third round picks and the players they visited with. We'll talk about the receivers, the offensive line, running back, and then kind of any of the other positions or players that each of us individually want to talk about. So we'll start off with that. The players who helped themselves the most. Obviously, there were some at the kind of the top end guys who got some of the most press, but there were a whole bunch of players who helped themselves the most. Justin, let's start with you. Who were the guys that stood out to you that helped themselves the most in over the course of the week?
Well, I'll start with quarterback Justin Herbert, because with Joe Burrow sitting out so far the whole draft season, he skipped the Senior Bowl, he didn't throw at the combine, and then Tua has been hurt. So Herbert's kind of just cruised through. He impressed people at the Senior Bowl. He impressed people with his workout and his throwing at the combine. So now you have, you know, could Herbert be quarterback one in the draft for some of these teams that are picking high in the pecking order? I think it's why they assume that Burrow goes number one to Cincinnati. I personally think that's still a little bit up in the air, although I'm ready to at least write it in pencil that Burrow is going there. But, you know, Herbert might have moved into the better graces of teams that are picking, you know, after the first overall pick. So I think he's one that even hear him quieting some of the fears about what had been reported as a passive personality. You know, people are refuting that now. They're saying what they've seen from him is encouraging. So I think Herbert's really really done a great job for himself, and he's probably made a bigger impression on people than any of the other quarterbacks up to this point. The receivers we'll talk more about later in the show, I think, but Chase Claypool, you mentioned, and Denzel Mims from Baylor, those guys were workout standouts. I think Mims compares favorably to Javon Walker. And if you plug in the numbers alone for Claypool, you're talking about guy who tests like Andre Johnson. So he's not going to go that high, obviously, but he has probably made himself some money, moved up on the boards. Offensive tackle Ezra Cleveland from Boise State had a great workout. It was similar to first-round pick Andre Dillard from a year ago. Yeah, the linebackers, Willie Gay and Malik Harrison, they both tested well, and they're probably moving up in the conversation. And then you had a couple small school defensive backs, Kyle Duggar from Lenoir Rhyme. I think that's Division II in North Carolina, if I'm not mistaken. But he had
it's
a great senior
school,
bowl
in my
week
opinion.
Two.
I think you just made it up.
Yeah. No, this is a real school. he had a good senior bowl week, and he tested along with Jeremy Chin from Southern Illinois. They both had measurables and testing that were similar to like a player like Derwin James. So you're talking about guys who I think will probably go on in the second, maybe third round. But those guys coming from small schools, that's pretty impressive to be able to move that up that far up during a draft season. So again, that kind of like Herbert, they had very impressive senior bowls, especially Duggar, and now the good combines to back that.
Seth, who stood out to you? Who, in your opinion, who are the players that helped themselves the most overall?
I think Justin hit on a couple with Mims and Claypool. One other wide receiver I just wanted to mention was Michael Pittman out of USC. The 40 time wasn't flashy, but at 6'4 and 223, he had a 4.52, but his vertical jump, his broad jump, and then his short shuttle was like ridiculous at 4.14. So you have a guy that is going to, you know, kind of, he's a bigger guy, but he has good feet, and then he has good jumps. So, you know, maybe an outside X type of guy. I've seen a lot of people call him a possession receiver. I was thinking that too, but he obviously tested fairly well. Another guy that was actually pretty interesting to me, his numbers, because they don't really make a ton of sense. And that was Cale Garrett out of Missouri. You know, I as a Cardinals fan watching linebackers, you kind of look at it and you're like, okay, he had really, really good short shuttle and three cone times, which to me is important for off ball linebackers, you know, their short area reaction time. And then he had just a sluggish 40, though. I mean, he was a 4.9 in the 40, but his three cone was 6.91, and his short shuttle was one of the fastest overall at the combine. I mean, he finished, I think, top 10 for a short shuttle, sorry, at the combine at 4.13. And so I don't know if one of the times was wrong somehow, or he like slipped or something, but yeah, 4.92 in a 40, and then a really good three cone and short shuttle. He's interesting because he kind of tested out like a guy that's a free agent this year that has been talked about with the Arizona Cardinals and Nick Kwiatkowski from the Chicago Bears linebacker. And so you kind of look at that and you're like, okay, obviously that's not an early round guy, but it, you know, maybe that's a guy you can get later in the draft that has the short area quickness to play. A guy we mentioned kind of at the end of the show last week was Devin DuVernay, and you know, he's a guy that is really interesting because he tested like a track star. His jumps weren't outrageous, but his short shuttle and his 40-yard dash were fantastic. So he's kind of like a Marquise Goodwin type guy, but a bigger frame version of that. I mean, he doesn't look to be overly short area quick wise, but he had, you know, good enough times. So I thought that was interesting in a obviously a great receiver class to see a guy, you know, test like a Lee Evans type.
And, hey, Seth, I actually thought he compared pretty favorably with the testing to Curtis Samuel, but he has more receiver experience.
Yeah,
I agree with you. I think he's a guy that's moving up.
And Samuel went round two, right, to the Panthers.
Right. DuVernay's not quite that fast, but it was kind of favorable.
Yeah, and then one last guy, and I don't mean to steal this from Jess, but we talked about him beforehand because I had a comp coming in for him, was Eno Benjamin. Despite his baby hands, Eno tested out well enough. I won't say that he tested out like a guy that's going to be a feature back or anything in that nature, but he tested out on a scale of like Duke Johnson to like Ronnie Hillman, where he's a guy that's going to get chances to be a third down back in the NFL and get carries and maybe be a guy that everybody wants to see more of, but NFL teams are like, no, he's fine getting the touches he's getting. That's why he's so effective.
For me, some of the players that I'll mention are some of the ones at the very top. Like, if there's a player, he couldn't have helped his stock a ton because he was already basically considered a top 10 pick, but Isaiah Simmons, Clemson, that 40 time and the explosive and the athletic testing that he showed up, his size and his position. I mean, there are some questions as to what he's going to do at the pros, and in a way he welcomed that. What position is he? Defense. The positionless player, there's a number of things he could do because he can play safety, he can play inside, he can play edge, especially for 3-4 time type teams. But with what he put up athletically there at the combine, he went from a top 10 pick to what seems like a top 5 lock. Unless, and that's the only thing that gets in the way here is how many quarterbacks go, or if there's a run on quarterbacks at the really top of the draft, then maybe he gets pushed down a little bit. But now it feels like, you know, he won't get past pick number 4 when he was getting considered around the Cardinals. But it just goes to show that the guy had the production, he's got the versatility, but then he puts up eye-popping numbers. I mean, when you add a linebacker position, run a sub-4.4, now maybe he's not a true linebacker, but he's built like a linebacker, which helps him a lot. So Simmons was a guy that stood out to me. As much as you could help yourself as a top-10 pick, he helped himself. Tristan Wirfs, offensive lineman, with his super athletic, he was a unicorn in terms of athleticism overall. 320 pounds, running the 4.86, and a vertical leap that outdid top receiver prospects Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb. If there was, I know Daniel Jeremiah talked about, has been kind of pounding the table saying that he thinks he'll be an elite guard, but did say that he could put up numbers at the combine that would put those doubts to rest in it. And I'm guessing with what he is saying is because he's heard it from some teams. If there was any doubt that he was athletic enough to play tackle, he sort of took any doubt away from that. You guys have another take on Mekhi Becton, but I know he caught the eyes with 364 pounds, coming in with a 5.10 on the 40 and the 17% body fat. He took away some of the doubts that some people had. I know Henry Ruggs was already kind of near the top. He's a first-round receiver. Putting up some of the things that he did, along with the fact that he's got ginormous hands for his size, also helped him quite a bit. And then another top name, that would be Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin. You know, if this were any other draft, if it weren't the state of running backs where you had the two Super Bowl teams featuring guys that were undrafted, you'd be talking about, in almost any other draft class, Jonathan Taylor with the production he had in college, combined with his size and then the elite speed he put up, we're talking top 10, top 5 consideration like we've seen with other top backs. And running the sub 4.4, you'd think would be a lock for the first round, but you don't know it with how the state of the NFL is right now, but if anything else, he cemented himself and should be running back one in this class.
You know, Jess, I did a mock draft on the draftnetwork.com the other day, and I got Jonathan Taylor in the third, and there's just no way. I think he's going to go in the first round, maybe early second, like where Nick Chubb went, but third round is just not realistic. I hope they update their boards.
And despite no testing whatsoever, a guy that we have to mention as a big winner from this weekend was Chase Young, because sitting out, he basically showed that, like, yeah, there's not a single pass rusher in this class that's going to come close to me. I mean, we saw it last year with the Josh Allen freak show that he put on, and people start saying, oh, you know, he's a little bit more athletic than Nick Bosa, and, you know, this and that, and then you know, and obviously Bosa was the right pick and everything, but there, nobody even did close to enough to put themselves in the discussion for that to be occurring this year. So, despite not doing any workouts, Chase Young was a big winner this weekend too.
Definitely.
Yeah, he could spend the rest of the draft season like in a lazy boy.
Well, right. I mean, considering the program he comes from, which is, you know, coming from Ohio State, that is the pass rusher you apparently right now, because they go from Bosa to Bosa to Young, and it seems like they might actually get better every year. That combined with just a lack of athleticism from the rest of the class, saying he doesn't have to do much. Let's be honest, he doesn't have to do anything else at all. We have to mention, he didn't do any workouts, but Tua Tagovailoa, the medicals, according to reports, all came back positive, so that was definitely a help, even though, well, let's be honest, it's not anything he could have done. Like, it's just his body healing. So, but it was good news for him and teams that are looking at him as a potential franchise quarterback. So there was that. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to move on. And instead of those who helped themselves, who are the players whose stock perhaps fell as a result of their combine performances? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Next up, the players who probably hurt themselves, saw their proverbial draft stock fall. We all have a few players that in here, and that one of the guys that I'm sure we're going to talk about, let me put the name out there, Derrick Brown, considered a top 10 pick, and even if the mock drafts that have come out, still considered a top 10 pick. But tell us, let's start, both of you, kind of whoever wants to go first, why was Derrick Brown's testing so devastating for him as a prospect?
Well, I don't think it's devastating, but I think it's telling that you know, this is what we talked about on the show last week, where you want, if you're going to take an interior lineman up at that part of the draft, the top five, the top 10, he's got to be, you know, he's got to give you pass rush. And I think what Derrick Brown's combine tells us, and what his production tells us, and even his tape, is that he can cave in the pocket, but he doesn't necessarily get home a lot. And it just gives me pause. It's kind of like Seth and I had this conversation years ago when Danny Shelton was in the draft, and we kind of threw up the warning flags and said, this guy is not a first-round player. He's not going to play the number of snaps that you want out of a first-round pick. He's not going to give you the pass rush you want at the NFL level. And that ended up being true. I think Derrick Brown's a little bit better of a player than Danny Shelton was, but I think it's kind of on the same spectrum where you're just talking about a guy who's more of a nose tackle than a pass rusher. He's not Aaron Donald by any means. He's probably not even Quinnen Williams as a pass rusher. So, to me, he's completely eliminated himself from top 10 consideration. I could see a team taking him in the back end of the first round or the early second round. I think he's going to go a lot higher than that because people have dug in on their takes on him, and he is still a very good player. So, I mean, I think people are going to take this as bashing him, but it's not. It's just to say he's not the type of prospect that you take in the top five, in the top ten. Even right after the combine ended for defensive linemen, I saw people say, I'm still firmly on the Derrick Brown bandwagon. That's fine. That's fine. I mean, but you're going to probably look back a few years from now and you're not going to see a guy that's getting 10 sacks a year. You're going to see a guy that's probably getting between 4 to 6 sacks a year at in the best case scenario.
Yeah, Brown was a guy that, you know, I thought was a kind of a guy that his workouts became worrisome because it was what you didn't want to see. It was a guy that kind of lacks the explosiveness at the next level to be a consistent sack guy. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be bad. In fact, Justin and I have a really good comp that we like about him, and that's in Linval Joseph, who's, you know, a multi-time Pro Bowl type of guy, but Linval's career high in sacks is 4. And that's not to say it's not worth it or anything like that, but Joseph went 46 overall. I'm not going to say that's where Brown should go because that's a, you know, they're different classes. But if that's what you're going to get from the player, I think that that's what you have to go in with that understanding. That, you know, maybe he's a bit more limited than we had hoped, especially those that wanted to see him as a top 4, top 5, top 10 pick. He's probably more of a run stopping type of guy. He's not a guy that wins in terms of, you know, kind of quickness and explosiveness, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just, you know, that's what you have to be aware of as you kind of watch going forward. And you know, you look at Joseph again. That's a high-end comp, and that's a really good player. Career high in snaps was 719. So that's the question you have to ask: is do you want to take a guy that, you know, that high, that's going to play maybe 70% of snaps? So that's the biggest thing. Another guy staying along the defensive line that I thought didn't do quite what everybody was hoping, and that was AJ Epenesa from Iowa. And again, another guy, 6'5", 275, and he didn't test as well as everybody had hoped. It wasn't quite as bad as Brown's three cone, but at his size, 6'5", 275, you wonder if he can put on enough weight to overcome that. You know, you look at a guy last year that the Arizona Cardinals drafted, Zach Allen, at 6'4", 280, and he put up better numbers almost everywhere but the 40. Actually, he beat him in the 40, too. So, I mean, that's where the question's going to come is, you know, is – and he went in the third round. So, is – AJ a guy that you take in the first round? Because I mean, he was getting top 15 conversation. Now he seems to be more in the general area of you know, the second or lower part of the first or early second round, and when you look at that, it probably lines up in terms of where he should get drafted overall.
I'm sorry, what's interesting about Epenesa is, like, people, I've seen people backing off, you know, their early season takes on him, where he was consistently being slotted in the first round, early first round, and people see his numbers, and like Seth said, for Cardinals fans, you already have a guy like this on your team, and now the pundits are kind of backing off on him, the draft picks are kind of hedging their bets. But with Brown, you're not seeing that as much, even though you know, this is a guy who really, if you look at, I know we, Seth and I used to take a lot of flack because we'd bring, sometimes bring high school numbers into the equation, and those don't always, you know, translate. But with Brown, he came in about 4 pounds different from NFL Combine to like Nike, the opening when he was in high school, and his numbers are pretty much the same across the board. So it really, if you looked at that, and if you looked at his body type and how much he's changed, it really shouldn't have been surprising that he was going to test like that.
For me, there was a player that he didn't do poorly, but it was disappointing that he didn't do better. Arizona State's receiver Brandon Ayuk was starting to get some buzz in the first round, and myself being a guy who watches every Arizona State game and have had season tickets for over a decade, I've seen the receiver prospects like Jalen Strong and N'Keal Harry, who all tested really well, and then watching the play of Ayuk, he looked, and I was certain of this, that he would be even faster than those guys. I was almost expecting something in the really low 4.4s and high 4.3s, just from what I thought. And but when he put up a 4.50, he had the vertical, but it, in terms of first round buzz, I think it kind of took him completely out of that conversation. So in a way, he didn't help himself. He hurt himself a little bit because, from my perspective, I thought he had higher end speed than he showed. We'll have to wait and see what happens at the pro day, but I think his combine performance hurt him a little bit simply because his stock seemed to be rising. I mean, he's a guy that Daniel Jeremiah is all over, and I do like the potential that he has. I expected him to test faster than he did.
Yeah, and you know, Ayuk is one of those guys that you look at and he passes the eye test, but he probably ends up being closer to like a Nate Burleson type, who had a really nice career. I mean, a long career. But, you know, we were maybe, like you said, maybe expecting a little more. And, you know, sometimes when you expect that, that's you put that on a player and they're just not there. I mean, and Burleson had a 1,000-yard season in his career, and he had numerous, you know, 600-plus yard seasons, and he played for 10 years in the NFL, so 11. So it's not like he's a bad comp to be in that same realm from an athletic testing standpoint. It's just and you know, Ayuk was a good punt returner, and that's where Burleson kind of made hay in the NFL and why he stuck around so long. So you look at it, that it kind of makes sense. But you know, to your point, he was drafted in the early third round. I would say with the way the combine worked out that you'd probably see Ayuk in that, you know, late second, early third, because like you said, the way that the receivers tested, Justin and I talked about it last week, like he didn't test well enough to stand out in a crowd of a lot of guys, and that's kind of where you have to do to get on somebody else's level. Either you have to have the numbers to back it up, and his numbers aren't bad by any means, or you have to have explosiveness to show that you can maybe do it. You know, somebody that we didn't mention yet, but like a Donovan Peoples-Jones, who ran just, you know, 2/100ths of a second faster, but at 6'2 and 212, and then, oh, by the way, like set the world on fire with his jumps. Like some of the best jumps we've seen at the combine. So that's what it kind of boils down to, unfortunately, for a lot of these guys, is that when you're in this kind of mass of humanity, that's how it works out.
Got a question on a player like LSU cornerback Christian Fulton. His 40 time was fine. His vertical's fine. His broad jump's fine. His three cone's pretty dang good. But then his shuttle, 4.36. What are we to think of that? Was it just a bad drill? Or is there are there other concerns that come with that athletically with Fulton, who's I've seen mocked kind of in the middle of the as high as the middle of the first round?
With Fulton, you know, I think most of his numbers were pretty solid across the board. I mean, the three cone time was in the average range. You know, the short shuttle is a little below average for a corner, but I'm not sure that's really too alarming for an outside corner. You know, I like his game, and I think he was getting some run as a day one pick, but I never really thought he was. You know, he had some early off the field issues, which maybe through not as much fault of his own, but they kind of got blown out of proportion, in my opinion. But still, you're probably talking about a guy who was more of a day two corner coming in. So I don't think Fulton hurt himself. I think he acquitted himself just fine as far as the testing goes. And that shuttle drill, if he chooses to, that's something he probably can improve on his pro day.
Yeah, I mean, he tested similar to former first-round pick Darqueze Dennard, and that's kind of where he would – it makes sense. I mean, from a size standpoint, he's bigger than Dennard by a little bit, not by a whole bunch. But you look at it and – you know, if Dennard, I mean, you can make the Bengals joke if you want, but like if Dennard went in the first round, maybe Fulton does too. Because, I mean, their skill set is similar too. They're both physical players. They're both kind of scrappy guys. So that would make sense. You know, the question I think you have then is the way he tested, is he more of a safety? I mean, when you really look at it, his closest profiles is a guy like Daron Harmon, who, remember, the Patriots took him in the second or third round all those years ago, and everybody was like flabbergasted. And so, you know, that's what the question becomes, is does he end up being more of a safety type than a corner?
Yeah, I think the fact that he kind of came in with short arms might be a bigger deal than the shuttle. Because and that was a kind of an issue with a lot of the corners in this class. They came in, in Fulton's case, he's like 5'11 and a half, but then he's got sub 31-inch arms. So, you know, we know NFL teams like a corner with around 31 or better. Some of those teams knock out corners that are below 32-inch arms. You know, I think Seattle famously targets corners that have 32-inch arms or longer. So, you know, he's probably not on the board as a corner for some of these teams. But again, I think that the way he came in and his play on the field the last couple of years, I think he's done enough. I think scouts would have liked to see him at the Senior Bowl, but I think he's probably in that day two area.
Any other players in particular that stood out as to didn't really help themselves?
Yeah, I want to mention Laviska Shenault and Zach Moss, because they both came in and they ran what I think a lot of people consider disappointing 40s. And then in Shenault's case, you find out that he has to have a surgery. I think he had a core muscle injury, or maybe sports hernia, something like that, where he's going to have surgery and miss like 4 to 6 weeks. So he's probably not – I don't know if we're going to see a pro day from Shenault where he could try and improve on those numbers. And this guy was billed as a freak athlete by his coaching staff and by Bruce Feldman. He obviously didn't show that. Moss, in my opinion, ran about what you kind of would expect from him, but at 4.65, that's borderline for a running back. So I know Pro Football Focus, I think, had him as their running back one, or at least Pro Football Focus Mike had him as running back one. I don't think that's realistic. I think Moss is a better player than David Montgomery. But I get David Montgomery vibes as far as where the draft picks had him ranked. I think they had him ranked too high, and now he settles back into that probably late day two, early day three area. I still think Moss is a player who, if he's healthy, he can end up being a starting running back for a few years in the NFL. But it's not a guy that I would put in the upper echelon when you look at the way these other backs tested.
Moss really reminds me of Terrence West from a couple years ago.
Yeah, Terrence West. I think I was talking to Emery Hunt, and I think he mentioned Monty Ball, and I thought that was kind of rough. But Ball, I thought, would have been a better player if he hadn't run into some troubles off the field. But you know, when I looked at comparable numbers to what Zach Moss tested, I came up with Ruben Drones, and that's a player who did become a starter for a couple of years, put up some nice numbers for a couple of years, but he wasn't a long-term solution for anyone. That's kind of where I see Moss. I think I still like him. I think he's a pretty good running back, but I think when this is – Moss is like a player that the running backs don't matter crowd look at, and they kind of like project that onto all running backs.
All right, we'll move on from there. Coming up next to the Rise of Secret podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we'll turn Cardinal-centric and kind of talk about what the combine meant for what the Cardinals could do it in the first, second, and third rounds, and talk a little bit about the players they visited with. That's kind of next in Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's go Cardinals-centric now. We're talking Cardinals and the combine. What did you – as I look at how the combine played out, it feels like, at least for now, what felt like was going to be the trend – where tackle or receiver's kind of the way to go, because the two defensive players that were kind of connected to the Cardinals at eight, Isaiah Simmons and Derrick Brown, Simmons appears to have taken himself out of consideration for the Cardinals simply because he's going to get taken ahead of time. And then Brown, if probably... even though right now he's still technically in the mix, probably took himself out of consideration with the testing, driving him down a little bit on what the Cardinals would do. In addition to frankly, some of the good numbers that were put up by guys like offensive lineman like Tristan Wirfs and Jedrick Wills, and some who might like Mekhi Becton. And the fact that receivers like Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb performed more or less what you would have expected them to do. So then it comes down to tackle or receiver, because it's probably not going to be defense unless somebody falls that's unexpected. And it's probably not going to be another. And in terms of the talent, it doesn't. Where they're sitting in the draft and the players that are available, it kind of seems inevitable at that point, doesn't it, Seth?
Yeah, I mean, that's where this is all kind of fall down to, is that, you know, we talked a little bit about it last week, but you kind of look at it and the Cardinals are going to have to decide whether or not they want to maybe take a non-pass rushing lineman or probably take the best offensive lineman or wide receiver with their eighth pick, because it'll be unlikely that Jeffrey Okuda or Isaiah Simmons, two guys that would probably be more impact defensive players, are going to be available at eight. Meaning, so now you're going to ask yourself, you know, is there a right tackle you want to take at eight, or is there a wide receiver you want to take at eight? I don't really know if there's any other choices. Maybe one guy, you know, that didn't really test at the combine could kind of sneak into the conversation, but I don't really see it because, and I don't even know how to pronounce his first name. Is it Kalavin Chason? I don't even know. But he's an edge rusher in the same build size as Chandler Jones. But really, I mean, if you're picking top eight, you want to get an impact player that's going to be on the field more than, you know, maybe 60% of snaps. And so that's what the question becomes, is where do they go with this? And you know, the way it tested out is it probably took two guys completely off the table, and maybe three, depending on your view of Derrick Brown.
As we kind of look at that, then the other thing to kind of look at now is, well, do you do receiver tackle in round one? And then what do you do in rounds two and rounds three, especially as we look at what could be, believe it or not, running back might end up being on the table for one of those picks, because if they don't re-sign Kenyon Drake, they're, as Seth and I've talked about on the show before, they're not going to likely go into the season just trusting David Johnson and Chase Edmonds. They clearly lost trust in Johnson late in the season. And the same thing kind of with Chase Edmonds. They like him, but I don't know how much they like him as an every down back. And, you know, you look at, apparently there is interest. If there's one player at the position the Cardinals have kind of zeroed in on right now, it is Zach Moss, who they spoke to at the combine. They have, according to his agent, according to Doug Farrar, who writes for Touchdown Rire now, have requested a private facility workout with Moss. If you want to kind of connect the dots, he is Pro Football Focus's running back one in terms of rating, and the Cardinals draft last year seemed to kind of match up with Pro Football Focus's rankings. So if we're kind of connecting the dots, he could be a guy that they start targeting early on in the process. Now, the debate then becomes, well, if you kind of have your linemen and your receivers sort of graded all in kind of the same place, do you take the best receiver, potentially an impact receiver at the top, like a CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy, and then hope you can find a tackle later on if that's still one of your priorities? Or do you take the really high-end tackles at the top of the draft and trust that you're going to get a receiver? As well, I think Daniel Jeremiah said there's 27 receivers he has graded in the first three rounds. Mel Kiper was on the radio today, on early Tuesday here locally in Phoenix, saying he has 30 receivers worth a third round pick or better. And so, do you want to go off offensive line at the start and thinking you can get potentially an impact or an impact receiver? Or is it going to end up just being part of that kind of mishmash of guys that you got? So you got Christian Kirk, you've got Andy Isabella, Hakeem Butler, Keyshawn Johnson, none of them who are standout guys. Do you take the standout receiver, hope you can find a tackle later? Do you take the tackle and hope you can have a receiver be more than just the guys that they got?
I think Arizona has to, if they're really, you know, going back and forth between offensive line and wide receiver, if Tristan Wirfs is there at 8, they absolutely have to take him there, because just as you just pointed out, you've got these pundits, these draft nicks, talking about how deep this receiver class is. There's no way there's going to be 30 receivers drafted in the first three rounds. But it speaks to, you know, I don't even agree with these guys that there are that many receivers that are graded that high, but there is depth, so that if you went offensive tackle at 8, you're probably going to get a better receiver in the second round than if you did vice versa and took CeeDee Lamb at 8 and then tried to find an offensive tackle. I think you'd kind of find somebody who's a tweener, maybe somebody who hasn't really proven themselves. There's a potential that the Boise State tackle Ezra Cleveland falls back into the second round, but I think he almost tested himself into that first round area. So I think there's going to be a rush on offensive tackles early in the draft. Cleveland's probably praying that Arizona takes a wide receiver at 8 so that they can land Wirfs at 10. They would love that fit, but you know, that's a conundrum. I think that Arizona has to take Wirfs if he's there. If you're debating between Jedrick Wills or Andrew Thomas from Georgia and the receivers, I think it's a closer call. But Wirfs looks like he tested like Trent Williams. And if you can get, I know Wirfs played right tackle, and you know, like you said, Jess, earlier, that people have been saying he might be a guard. I think that's foolishness to put him at guard. He has all the tools to play left tackle in the NFL. It's just a matter of putting him in there, get him coached up. I know that sounds easier. That's easier said than done, but I have full confidence that a guy with his background coming from a school like Iowa, it's that's produced a lot of good offensive linemen. I think that's the way to go. And you can get some of these needs addressed. Running back, you mentioned David Johnson, a guy who they could look at as a replacement for David Johnson, is Antonio Gibson from Memphis, who ran a 4.39. He's a running back receiver tweener. He actually tested with the receivers, but he looks more like a running back with his build, and he's almost like David Johnson type build. That's a player Arizona could maybe get in the fourth round, maybe third round, but still, that's something they could address later. Linebackers the same way, and there's just not going to be an edge at eight that you're going to want to take. So I think it does come down to offensive tackle, receiver, and if Wirfs is there, I think it's and I am not one to advocate offensive line. I love skill players, but offensive line, Wirfs, he looks like a sure bet to me.
Yeah, and I think Wirfs at eight is an easy pick to make. It's a low risk, high reward pick because he does profile out to be at minimum a long term solution at tackle. So that's a big thing for the Cardinals right now. If they don't take a receiver in the first round, I don't know how I feel about taking a receiver at all in this draft, unless you're going to take a flyer on like a Donovan Peoples-Jones that we talked about a little earlier, maybe a Michael Pittman or somebody like that that has some size and speed to them.
You might be able to get Pittman, or you might be able to get Chase Claypool with that second round pick, or Denzel Mims. I mean, yeah. That's how deep receiver is.
And so that's what you'd have to decide if you'd rather take a guy like that over maybe – I mean, I know we're all pretty high on Jonathan Taylor, but like a Jonathan Taylor at 40, if he's really going to last to that point. Because to me, the biggest thing would be if obviously it all depends on what happens with Kenyon Drake, but if they don't re-sign Kenyon Drake, I think adding Wirfs and Taylor would be – I mean, it's basically taking from the Dallas playbook at that point, right? Like you now have a good offensive line to maybe very good offensive line, and now you have a potentially elite running back, and now you're taking pressure off the quarterback to make plays. And so, Dallas had to go get an Amari Cooper down the road, but I think it'll allow your offense to be really focused and functional. It's still not going to be an offense that you're going to win the NFC West with, but it'll be an offense that'll allow you to compete in a lot of games and truly kind of grind out and slow down games in a different way. Outside of that, I mean, you know, you mentioned Mims and Claypool. What do you think? And it's not a position that gets talked a lot about, but what do you think of the tight end position, especially the kid from Missouri that tested so well in round three, Justin?
This tight end class is not great. Round three is probably where I would start investigating the tight ends, but you've got a lot of guys from my standpoint that kind of look like H-back types. Maybe even fullback / H-back types. A guy I liked a lot on tape was Harrison Bryant from Florida Atlantic, but he does look like that H-back type of tight end, and I still think he's a good player, and I would like him on my team, but, you know, how early do you have to take him? I think the Purdue tight end, Bryson Hopkins, he tested very well, but there are some questions about his hands. You know, he was really productive. I think you could look at him in the third round or fourth round. The one guy that's kind of intriguing to me was the Virginia Tech tight end, Dalton Keene. I believe he was a quarterback recruit that converted to tight end. Those guys are always interesting. And then Keene, he wasn't super productive in college. They really didn't use him a lot, but he tested a lot like TJ Hawkinson last year, who was everybody's darling, a guy who ends up getting picked in the top 10. So I actually think you get Keen after the third round. So I probably would pass on tight end in the third round. I'd look at some of these other positions we talked about, running back, linebacker, those positions that can help Arizona. And then you can probably get a tight end later, especially because it's not going to be a huge, huge part of the offense as far as targets go.
What do you think, Seth, about the – now, in terms of the guys that the Cardinals spoke with formally at the Combine, it was a mishmash of guys that you have to figure that they're in play for the number 8 pick. But then three other guys stood out. One is Zach Moss. We've already talked about him. Louisiana Tech cornerback Amik Robertson. And then Oklahoma off defensive tackle Neville Gallimore. What did you take away with now, obviously there's going to be they spoke with more than that. These are the ones we know. But outside of the guys that are going to be considered for number 8, what did you take away from those other visits that we know of?
I'm a big Gallimore fan. For the simple fact, I think you get him probably in a more conducive place, you know, on day 2 or maybe even day 3, depending on, you know, how this draft falls. I mean, he's a guy that he didn't test crazy. People are going to like his 4.79 40, but his 3 cone and shuttle weren't exactly great. But he's a similar power player to that of Derek Brown. He's just, you know, he's about 30 pounds lighter at 6'2 and 304. So I like Gallimore. I think it makes sense to me that they met with him. He kind of is in that same category as like a Hassan Ridgeway from a couple seasons ago, that a lot of people like coming out. Ridgeway hasn't been great in Indy, but he's not, you know, he hasn't been awful either. And so I think you've got a guy that can maybe play a little bit, you know, and that's kind of what you want to look for is minimizing that bust potential with a guy like him. I mean, I don't know if he's going to be as good as the kid that Cleveland drafted a couple years ago, Ogbonjuwe, who's turned out to be really good, and had, you know, was a little bit more explosive in his jumps than Gallimore. But I think that you can end up seeing a similar type of transition. But the question again becomes, I don't know if that's a guy I want to take at 40. So that's where it comes for me, is like, if you can get Gallimore in the third round, I'm a lot more comfortable with it. Whereas at 40, where you could potentially get a, you know, like a guy like Jacob Phillips, the linebacker out of LSU, or Kenneth Murray, maybe. I know people have him going pretty high, you know, or another linebacker to kind of think about is Jordan Brooks, who went to Texas Tech. So, you know, maybe Cliff Kingsbury knows a little bit about Brooks and his abilities. Then I'm a little, you know, higher on that than I would be maybe Gallimore at 40. If you're talking strictly kind of defense.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to come back and talk about, we'll start talking about more position centric. Up next, the wide receiver position overall. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We've talked about some of the receivers. Chase Claypool's name that came up. I talked about Brandon Ayuk. We've had Denzel Mims. Now, as we look at kind of the receiver position and the combine, are there other names that stood out? I know there's a kind of a Cardinals connection here. The Texas kid, Devin Duvernay, however you pronounce the last name, I haven't looked it up, but really high end speed. Turns out he's Kyler Murray's cousin and happens to have the same agent as a certain couple of guys that are kind of important in the Cardinals organization, and Kyler and Cliff. Where do we see a guy like him? Who is it? Seth, that was telling me off in one of our in our group texts that he's a poor man's Tyreek, correct?
Yeah, like, I mean, that's kind of what people would hope for. I mean, he's a little bit bigger because he's 5'11 and 200 pounds. You know, and his 4.39 was great, but his he doesn't have that short area that that Tyreek would have. And so that's the thing. Like, I don't know if he's a guy that you look at as a guy. I mean, is he going to be that much better than like a Christian Kirk? I don't even know if he'd be as good as Christian Kirk, who he's kind of similar to. I mean, he's a little bit faster, but
and he's so built that's like him.
Yeah, and so that's where I, you know, I struggle with DuVernay. You know, he had a good combine, but he's a guy that I just kind of struggle with. You know, we talked about him, like Curtis Samuel, like all those guys that we're mentioning, like none of them have really been great wide receivers yet. And so that's the hard part. You know, another guy that was interesting because a lot of people were disappointed in his overall 40 time, but his combine was actually really good, was Jalen Reagor, out of TCU, where he kind of jumped out of the building, but again, kind of similar to DuVernay, it wasn't what people expected. And so when you look at it, and then his shuttle times were really not great. So he's kind of a straight line guy, but good jumps, or I shouldn't say that, great jumps, super athletic in that sense, not a, you know, a slightly above average 40, but then really, really bad short area times. So even at 5'11", you know, I think I mentioned, you know, he's kind of like Lee Evans was back in the day. Where did Evans go? Was he at Wisconsin, Justin?
Yeah. Lee Evans was a Wisconsin guy. And, you know, I wanted to say this about Reagor. What's interesting about him is his shuttles were like so bad that I think a lot of people don't really trust it. But if you look at him, he almost compares to a running back. Like his profile almost looks like Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, and that's what my concern is. But you know, because he kind of seems like an ex receiver that they've talked about, but I think, I mean, do you think he's still going to go in the first round, or do you think he's going to be a day two guy, Justin?
I think he's definitely going to go on day two. I don't think he's going to be a first round guy because you had, you know, some subpar production for what we wanted to see from him this year. I think he was highly touted coming into the year. I think it's kind of like what we talked about earlier when we were talking about Derek Brown. There were so many draft picks dug into Reagor as a high pick, a first-round pick. They're really now going to go back and try and justify, or they're going to go and hope that he runs better shuttles, I guess, at his pro day. I don't really think that the bad shuttles are that big of a deal because he seems like more of that angular one-cut-and-go guy, and that's kind of what Texas Christian did with him. They'd run him on some of these jet sweeps, or they try and get him open on these tunnel screens, and he makes that cut, and he can fly. I think he's faster probably than what we saw.
He timed, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, and maybe he came in a little heavy. Maybe that's why the 4.47, I think I saw he tweeted something that suggested that they started a clock late on him, but I know they go back and adjust those times, so I'm not sure, you know, 4.4, 4.47, whatever he tested as, is still a fast player. But I think he's going to be on day two because I think there's just a flood of receivers. But I really, a guy we've talked about a couple times throughout this show, I really like the idea of Arizona landing a guy like Donovan Peoples-Jones, maybe in the third round. Maybe I don't think he's going to get traction enough to get up into that high second round area. But if he's up there in the high third round, then you've got a player who I think most people would agree he might be the receiver who suffered the most from subpar quarterback play or lack of targets. He kind of fought through injuries this year to get back on the field. And I think Peoples-Jones is one of those players that I would take a bet on that he's going to outproduce what he showed in college.
What would you guys think of a guy like Justin Jefferson? The way he tested, there's actually a little bit of connection because he's coached by Jerry Sullivan, who's on the Cardinals staff. Some people like it. Mocks have him late first round, so he's probably not making it all the way to the second. But if the Cardinals wanted to move back, get picks, I'm not a big fan of that. But what do you think about Jefferson as a prospect, in particular as the type of receiver he is? The Cardinals need someone on the outside. They already have a million slot-type players, and even a guy like Andy Isabel, they're trying to make a slot player who wasn't a slot player. But what do you say of Jefferson at LSU?
Jefferson kind of reminds me of Devontae Parker coming out from Louisville, where I think he'll be a good player. I think it'll take a couple years for him to get there, and that's kind of where you'll watch at. I mean, he's a little bit shorter, but they're about the same weight. So that's one guy, where if you got him at 40, he's probably not going to be an impact player in year one, as he's trying to learn. Because I think, didn't he play a lot of the slot at LSU, Justin?
Yeah, well, I think he was largely projected as a slot guy, but I think he did a little bit of both. I'd have to go back and check my notes, but yeah, I think Jefferson is a player who really benefited from the college strength and conditioning that he got, and really developed into, he's a lot. I think he came out a lot faster than people thought he would. I know I took the over on him running at 4.51, and then he beat that by almost a tenth of a second. So, I was impressed with him. He's one of the players that I want to go back and take a second look at, but I think Jess said he was going in the first round of mocks. Again, how many receivers are we putting in there? I think he's going to be a day two guy. And if you can get him in that spot in that third round, that's going to be fantastic because, he's obviously very productive. He had over 100 catches last year on a team that had Jamar Chase, who was probably the best receiver in college football last year as a true sophomore. So I like Jefferson a lot. I'm not buying him as a first round talent, but I do think he can play outside in the NFL.
Hey, Justin, I wanted to ask you on, I know we've mentioned Denzel Mims a couple times, but what do you think of the comparison to Chris Godwin?
I think Mims is a little bit taller, right? He's a little bit taller than Godwin.
Yeah, a couple of inches, yeah.
Yeah, I can kind of see that similarity because you can see on the tape that they both kind of excelled with those back shoulder throws and the body adjustments to the ball in the air, not necessarily catching the best thrown balls, but still being able to haul them in. But I think he actually, Mims came out faster. And, Godwin turned out to be a great player, and they got him, in the second round, if I'm not mistaken. So Mims, I think, has actually moved into the first-round conversation. If four or five receivers go in the first round, as we're seeing projected, I think Mims might slide into the late first round. But I really like him. I liked him a lot before the combine. I think he tested better than I thought he would, and probably better than a lot of people did. And he's one of the only people, when we talked earlier in the show about how these guys were complaining about the time of day and their poor agility testing, Mims had a great agility score. So I think he's really, really made himself, and he also had a great Senior Bowl. So he's really made himself some money in this draft season. So if you're going, if you're Arizona and you're talking about Mims, your target is second round for him.
Then let's move on to the next grid. Coming up next on the Rise of Secret Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about the offensive line. Where does it go after those first, really those five prospects? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Offensive line is now the talk. It's considered, obviously, it's so far, the receiver class is thought of highly. The offensive line class is top heavy. In Todd McShay's, I think it was Todd McShay's mock draft that came out on early Tuesday, that he had five tackles going in the first 10. Now, outside of Becton, outside of Werfs and Andrew Thomas and Jedrick Wills, who is there available? We've talked a little bit about Ezra Cleveland. Who are the prospects that are available? Who's got a little bit of potential to develop into something? Who are some other names to pay attention to, especially if the Cardinals don't go tackle with their first pick?
Well, I've got three names, and these are guys that stood out for me in the All-Star season and then actually had very good combines as well. I'll start with guys that were college tackles and I think are going to end up being guards in the pros, and that's John Runyon Jr. at Michigan. I think he has comparable athletic testing to J.C. Tretter, who eventually moved to center, and he just signed a big extension with Cleveland. And then Hakeem Adeniji from Kansas. He played offensive tackle. He looks like he's going to be a starter at guard for a long time. He had a great combine, and I really was impressed with him watching the Senior Bowl practice tape. And then the third guy I really like is Temple center Matt Hennessy. And I think he tested out a lot like BC guard Chris Lindstrom last year, went in the first round. So Hennessy's probably going to go like third round maybe, and you're going to get a player that you could probably play at center or guard, and he's going to be a solid starter for you for a long time. So those are three guys. I think you got two guys who you could possibly try at tackle, maybe ultimately move to guard, and then a third guy who's going to be a center or guard.
Yeah, I think all three of those guys are guys I wrote down. Hennessy is a guy I really like, but I don't know how many more centers the Cardinals can take. But I'll stay with the center. Cesar Ruiz out of Michigan is another guy. He's an interior offensive lineman. You know, if you can get him on day two with that third round pick, he's a guy that profiles similar to a guy that we really liked last year. You know, James Daniels out of Iowa. That's a guy that I wouldn't mind seeing. You mentioned Ezra Cleveland. I want to go back to him because I think if you talk about taking a guy at 40, he would probably be the first one that would kind of pop to me as a guy that can play right tackle right out of the gate. He played left tackle at Boise State. He's incredibly athletic. And at 6'6 and 3'10, you know, he has the profile and size that he could probably play guard or tackle in the NFL. I think you can try him out at right tackle to begin with, and then if he doesn't work out to the degree you want in the first year, he can play he could probably take over for like a J.R. Sweezy the next year. So, I mean, Cleveland, I thought, was kind of the main guy when I watched him. I did get concerned when he tested so well, so I had to go check his bench press because I was like, is this another Austin Corbett like we talked about last week where he's not going to have any functional strength? But then he actually put up 30 reps on the bench, so you're like, okay, so he's super athletic, and then he also is strong enough, you know, to hold up. So that was another guy that impressed me. The rest of the time there wasn't anybody that was overly like, I love this guy, or his test jumped out at me. But there was one guy that had been talked about, and I've seen even mocked in the first round on the other side that kind of concerned me, and that was Isaiah Wilson out of Georgia. We talked about Derek Brown and his, you know, kind of death knell, three cone time. You had the same kind of result from Wilson. Wilson was massive, by the way, at 6'6", 350. I mean, he is just a massive dude. And his three cone and shuttle were not exactly what you wanted for a guy that size. He kind of looks like who's that? I can't pronounce his name, but the Vitae kid that plays for Philadelphia. That's kind of who he reminds me of. Like, he's just extraordinarily large, but he's kind of lumbering in that way, and that's kind of concerning to me about that.
Yeah, and I think if you want Vitae, I think he's a free agent, so that's something that Arizona might explore, and then that might take offensive tackle. It might, you know, take it off their top priority list of needs.
Coming up next to the Rise FC Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talking. Well, we will wrap this show up talking about running backs and then any other positions of players that basically just kind of round things up, running back and then any other players that kind of jump out at us. That's coming up next on Rise FC Red. We're back on the Rise of Z-Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Running backs and other positions. We've talked a little bit about guys like Jonathan Taylor. I brought up Eno Benjamin. There were some other running backs that really kind of stood out in some ways. It's a more talented crop than many people thought. Maybe it's simply because they're being pushed down because of the narrative of running backs not being all that valuable. Florida State's Cam Akers performed well. Boston College AJ Dillon performed well at a particularly large size at running back. Who are some of the other running backs that have a chance to make some sort of impact?
Well, you mentioned two of them. Akers, Seth and I were talking prior to the show. We both came up with a Marshawn Lynch comparison. Dillon tested a lot like Derrick Henry at a similar weight. He's a little bit shorter. LSU's Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a player that a lot of draft picks like, and he kind of tests favorably to Aaron Jones. And then DeAndre Swift is a lot of people's number one running back, and I comp him to D'Angelo Williams. So I think there's a lot of really high-end running backs, and then I do think you have kind of a drop-off after that. So then if you're trying to look for sleepers or guys that are going to fall into that third or fourth round range, that's probably why Arizona's talking to Zach Moss. If they're looking to get a running back later, I think Josh Kelly from UCLA had a great Senior Bowl. He was the best Senior Bowl all-around running back that I saw, and he's probably going to be there on day three. And then you got some real sleepers that had – pretty good combines. Darrington Evans from Appalachian State and Rico Dowdle from South Carolina, who's been really banged up throughout his career, but I think he compares pretty favorably as far as testing goes to like Marlon Mack. So Mack, I think, was a fifth round pick. If you get Dowdle in that fifth to seventh round range, then you might have a player that you get some more value out of. So I like this running back class top to bottom, but I do think that the top five, six running backs really separate themselves and settle into that top 50 to 60 range.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one guy that could kind of fall out of there would be Dillon, just because of the size. And I mean, he, you know, you talk about the workload of Jonathan Taylor, and Dillon was kind of similar in workload, how many touches he got throughout his career. So, you know, when you look at it like that, that's a guy that you could see like fall into the later third round, but he'd be kind of the only one that I could see fall. A guy that I was been kind of waiting to see if he does anything, and he hasn't really done a whole lot, was LaMichael Perrine out of Florida. he didn't test poorly by any means, but I mean, at 5'11 and almost 220, you have been waiting to see something. He was at the Senior Bowl as well, right, Justin?
Yeah, and actually he got good reviews from the Senior Bowl, but he's kind of a player who's kind of shared the load throughout his career, and like you said, his testing is kind of middle of the road. So it's you're talking about a day three running back with Piran, and you know, he's a solid player, but you know, I wanted to go back to just briefly touch on Dylan. I think part of I think what you said is true. Dylan might kind of be an afterthought in a way and fall back, and I think he has that stigma of not being a pass catcher. I think he had maybe a sophomore season where he didn't even have any catches. Now he did better this year. They got more involved, and so it seems like through no fault of his own that he wasn't involved, but that's the stigma he's carrying.
What are your thoughts on like an Anthony McFarland out of Maryland? Because I've seen some people that really love him, and then some people that you know, aren't big fans of his because he hasn't been able to stay healthy at all really in college. And you know, 5'8 and 208, he's not real. And I mean, he had a great 40 time for a running back, but that was really it, right?
Yeah, he really had one standout game in college too, and that was in 2018 against Ohio State. And Ohio State gave up a ton of big running back games, big rushing yard games that year, and McFarland had the best one of all, where he had almost 300 yards, and a lot of that was in the first half. And he definitely has speed, that's evident from the tape. But you know, I'm not as bearish or bullish on McFarland as some of the other draft picks, because he just, you know, he never really capitalized after that. It was just you know, he had a great redshirt freshman season, but then the following season he just didn't take off. Part of that was being on a really bad team. He shared the running back load with lesser players, but he just didn't take that next step. So I think he's going to be available later. I see him being put in the really early in some of these dynasty football rankings, because he is the type of player that dynasty fantasy football players like, because of the speed and the athletic profile. But I'm not super high on him. I think he's going to be like a late day three guy. And I should say, one thing I want to clarify is, because it's still floating out there, he's not Booger McFarland's son. He is a different Anthony McFarland's son.
And the reason I brought him up is because his, you know, Justin and I have always talked about comps and like the proper way to do comps. And we're never going to say ours is the best way, but it's the best way. And you always want to give, you know, guys a scale that they can kind of be on. And the reason I bring McFarland up is because his athletic testing and his kind of overall production in college, he's on the same type of – he's on a scale of like DeAndre Washington, who played at Texas Tech, and people know, you know, that Cliff Kingsbury knows really well, to like Devontae Freeman. And so, like, there's a guy there that – and I think Freeman was taken really late, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was a fifth-round pick.
Yeah,
I
mean, and so
he that's, really panned out. It's a like broad spectrum.
Yeah, and so that's kind of, you know, I've seen people, I when you see, you know, production and athletic testing in that range, I see why people like a McFarland. And so if you're going like day three, kind of deep, like, you don't want to take a back early, but you want to get a back in here. Like, that's the type of guy that you bring in because of, you know, that range of outcomes that you can put on him. But there, I would warn everybody really early that there could be some injury concerns with him. So,
anyone else at any other position that you guys want to bring up that are worth mentioning that we haven't discussed? Obviously, The positions that we've talked about, receiver, offensive line, running back, feel like they are the deepest. Defensive backs, defensive players, anyone worth mentioning whether at the top, middle, or at the end of the draft that stood out the combine?
I just want to do a quick rundown, actually, of the guys who didn't test at the combine. These are the big names I'm going to be watching for when it comes to pro days. I think I mischaracterized this guy as a smaller, like, interior lineman, but he's actually one of the bigger interior linemen and could be the guy people want Derek Brown to be, and that's Javon Kinlaw. He shined at the Senior Bowl for the first couple of days and then had to drop out. It'll be interesting to see if Kinlaw tests. Then you have wide receiver Bryan Edwards from South Carolina. I think he has a broken foot. I don't know what his plans are, but I think he's going to try and get back and have a pro day late in the game. J.K. Dobbins only did the bench at the combine. That was personal choice. You have Tyler Johnson, a receiver from Minnesota, who hasn't he skipped out on the Shrine game and the combine workouts. He's aiming for his pro day. You have receiver Van Jefferson from Florida, who was a big Senior Bowl riser and then didn't test at the combine. Ben Bartsch, an offensive lineman from Division III, I think St. Joseph's, and I think that's in Minnesota. He's he didn't test at the combine. The big story about him was the protein shake he drank to gain a ton of weight after coming in as a tight end. And then, of course, Joe Burrow, the top quarterback on most people's board, he still hasn't thrown for anybody. He's always been eyeballing his pro day. Of course, if he's the de facto number one pick, there's really not much for Joe Burrow to do.
Yeah, and I just want to say, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week, but if Okuda's on the board at 8, I don't think that there's any way, barring Isaiah Simmons to be there, that you can pass on Okuda. He didn't run as fast as everybody had hoped. Some people were even saying in the high 4.3s, but if you look at this corner class, he's clearly the guy. And like Chase Young, you know, they don't really have much to prove. So if Okuda ends up being available at 8, all the conversations about tackles and wide receivers and everything else, to me, should go out the window, because as we've seen with every other corner outside of Patrick Peterson, finding cornerbacks is nearly impossible in the NFL. And so, you know, if you want to go back to the Seattle Seahawks method when they had, you know, Richard Sherman and Brandon Browner, that's not a bad thing to do. And Okuda, along with Peterson, and obviously last year's second round pick Byron Murphy, I think that gives you a formidable long-term secondary that you can, you know, really hang your hat on. And so that's the one thing I would say coming out of this is, like, if you just look at the two positions, pass rusher and corner, those are like the two shallowest positions. I think we can all agree that it's between slim and none of the Cardinals getting a chance to draft Chase Young, and it should be the same with Okuda. But if those mocks that we're seeing now are accurate, where, you know, the Cardinals are passing on Okuda for like a Derek Brown or even a Tristan Wirfs. I mean, Wirfs is a little more palatable, but I can't even imagine those are close to accurate.
And I was banging the table earlier for Wirfs if he's there at 8, but that was assuming Okuda was gone, because I completely agree with you. If Okuda's there at 8, that's a guy I would take over Wirfs. It'd be a closer call than some of these other ones, but Okuda should be a top 3 to 5 pick in this draft.
And with that, we will end this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, episode 260. That wraps up our combine talk. A big thanks to Justin Higdon, who joins us for the second week in a row. Seth Cox and I will be back next week. It'll be a later show. It'll be a later in the week show, as we will do our free agency preview, as we are right there. We're just a couple of weeks away from the rumors and the money to be thrown around, and we'll see what's coming up then. So until then, until next week, that's Justin Higdon joining us for the second week in a row. That's Seth Cox, and I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, always. We will be back again in a little more.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.